is Weather Brains, the weekly show all about the weather. This is episode number 353 for October 29th, 2012. We got a lot to talk about tonight. We got a major issue going on in the northeast United States. Hurricane Sandy became post-tropical storm Sandy, made landfall on the New Jersey shore. And that obviously is the big story of the night. We're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the impact. We'll talk about the forecasting, the science, the funny stuff, the serious stuff. So a lot of things to do here, but let's go around the horn and welcome our regular cast. By the way, we think that Brian Peters is ordering a pizza for those of you watching there. I don't know if it's Papa John's or a Pizza Hut or whatever, but we told him to hold the anchovies.
Either
right?
That or he's online with NHC.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they watched our show last night, and they're really ticked off about what he had to say. But Kevin Selle, the Golden Pipes you're hearing there, is in Dallas-Fort Worth, who is our tropical weather expert in Texas.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so what I did was I invited two guys from Oklahoma to join us, so that makes even more sense.
Yeah, and you know, last night we had our New York expert who was in Arizona. it's the good old internet. It's virtual. You can be anywhere and make it all
work. It really is something how you can report like that Eric was doing from all the way across the country and still, you know, do a pretty good job.
Yeah, he was a great guest last night. And again, if you'd like to go back and watch those specials we did, that they're not... We did not make them audio shows. They're available up on YouTube, and we'll be sure and get those up on the Weather Brains website. I don't think we posted them yet, but anyway, they're out there for the world to see. But Kevin, thanks a lot. We have Nate Johnson in Raleigh, North Carolina, the good professor who just finished his class. And how was it?
He taught people how to mute.
That's right. He lesson for next week is going to be the mute button.
And then the unmute button.
Yes. Apparently, Nate has lost his audio there. And things like that
happen. Try that.
There he is.
There you go. Bingo. Bingo.
It wasn't that I had the mute button. It was the on-off button on my microphone. I had forgotten to turn it on.
Oh, boy.
So, an abundance of caution.
And someone gave him a class. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. Well, I'm not an engineer.
No, okay.
So
you're a union shop.
Yeah. So I had a great, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. No, class was good tonight. We actually spent about the first half of it just bouncing around live streams of live coverage of Sandy and, you know, picking apart the good and taking lessons from the good and picking apart the bad. And it was an educational experience for them, I think, and for me as well. And just watching this, watching it make landfall essentially right before your eyes, it's just incredible.
Yep, and again, Nate is at he's with WRAL in Raleigh, North Carolina. I would say, Nate, you're the guy closest to the action here, since the rest of us are a bit farther west. So you will be our in storm expert for tonight.
All right.
So let's see, Brian Peters. I have no idea who this is. Brian's over there just talking on the phone. He's talking to the pizza place or his girlfriend. So, Bill Murray, I'll kick it over to you and let you introduce our guest because we have a lot to talk about tonight.
Yeah, we did a short interview, James, with a friend of the podcast, Sean Potter, who's in communications with the Weather Service. He's embedded with the National Weather Service in Upton. I thought it'd be nice to get an update from him about what was going on in New York City. And then we can talk about the controversial question that I asked him at the end.
Okay, and again, let me just kind of explain what the deal is here. This is going to be an audio-only segment, but we thought this was important enough. So for those of you watching, you're going to just see a graphic up on the screen. And tell you what, let me turn that off. I've actually got one of the local New York stations up on the big screen here. But again, we're going to roll this audio and you'll be seeing just the graphic. And then we're going to bring in our special guest from WDT. We got so much to talk about. We're going to talk about the transformation to post-tropical. We're going to talk about, and I tell you what, before we roll this segment, let's just talk about what's going on right now. And I'm going to go around the horn here and everybody just kind of, if you would share what you know by your contacts. A lot of us are pretty connected by social media. Nate, let me start with you because you're closest to the action. Before we roll the Sean Potter interview, what do you think, New York City? It sounds pretty bad up there to me.
Yeah, I think you could sum this word up in bad. I was talking to my news director earlier today, and on the scale of proportions, you have historic proportions, you have epic proportions, and you have biblical proportions. We're not quite to biblical, but we're north of epic in terms of the number of people that will be affected by this. We have flooding in the New York subway. The New York Stock Exchange is now taking on water as well. We've got, as of right now, last time I checked, 3 million people without electric, 3 million customers without electric power, and that's, you know, houses, so there may be, or apartments or anything, there may be two or three people in each one of those, something like that. This is very bad, and we will be talking about this for a long time.
Yeah, I think so. I am watching one of the local New York stations on my monitor here in the weather office where I work, and watching the lower part of Manhattan down here. I've seen cars floating. Again, the stock exchange is taken on water. The subway's taken on water. A lot of our fears, I'm afraid, are coming to pass. We have high tide, and it looks pretty bad. And by the way, let me introduce producer JP. I totally forgot. I'm sorry, JP. JP is in Starkville, Mississippi.
Oh,
he is the guy that has the task of putting the audio together. He spends all Monday night editing. So, JP, what have you seen and heard about this thing?
Well, you know, I've been surfing a few message boards and been reading, and just, you know, just a lot of wind, a lot of rain, you know, tree and power line damage. A very bizarre storm, very interesting storm. And, you know, it looks like, you know, actually I'm reading the Drudge headline now, and it says Manhattan goes dark. Interesting there.
Yeah, Con Ed pulled the power to avoid damage to their system. And again, you know, it's they're in the dark. They're partly underwater. Kevin, what are the highlights you've seen so far with this
well,
thing?
Well, a lot of them. Most recently, Brad Panovich posted on Google Plus one of the storm surge reports from New York, from the Battery. And the current stage, when he posted this just a short time ago, was 13.85 feet, which breaks the old record surge there from 1821, which was 11.2 feet. So we're over 2.5 feet over the old record at the Battery in New York, and the wind is still coming. So I think we're going to see more of that. And I think we're going to see a lot more, and unfortunately probably not see a lot of the isolated tree damage that's going to happen in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. That thing came in pretty fast. It really got on its horse and was almost 30 miles per hour. So momentum alone is probably going to carry it into central and western Pennsylvania, where I think maybe they knew they were going to get something, but probably ends up being a little heavier there. And James, I'll go ahead and introduce our guest since we're going around the horn. David Vandenhoevel, who was with us last night. Since our last night's program, he has not been usurped as the guest with the longest name. Whoever. But David works for WDT. David, tell us your, you know, a couple of thoughts that you've seen here in the last couple of hours.
Well, looking at a lot of the things that are going on right now, we are starting to see some of the temperatures drop, and we're starting to see a lot more of that rain changing over to sleet and snow, looking at some of the radar coverage. Looking at the surface analysis as well, wind speeds are continuing. I mean, the broadness of the wind pattern, like we talked about last night with the storm, is just absolutely incredible. And then to solve all the hard modeling questions, I've got Brent Shaw with me tonight. So,
yeah, great. Brent's also from WDT, and he's going to join us as well. Brent, your title is Director of Operations. Is that what you told me earlier? Did I remember correctly?
No, I'm actually the Director of Meteorological Content.
Content.
So,
that's right.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
So I deal with all of our modeling and all of our meteorological experts that do the back end kind of stuff. And so
we're thrilled to have you, because we had a lot of, you know, questions about the models yesterday, and now it's obvious. Inland, but we continue to need the models to figure out where we're going next. So we'll ask you a little bit about that in just a bit. But you have any observations maybe closer to currents here?
Well, you know, I just been kind of watching it. It strikes me, you know, you look at satellite imagery, and if you weren't following the news, you just look at it and say, well, it's another cold core storm, you know, in New England. But man, you know, it's amazing what some rain can do in places like that. And I guess one of the big concerns is they've been worried about looting with all this. They've actually, you were talking about social media earlier. Oh. They're worrying about people coordinating looting via social media, of all things.
Wow, that's amazing. That'll create a social media discussion buzz in a day. days ahead. Yeah,
they will. So maybe that's why people are protecting their tweets. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
Their tweets are getting looted.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us. James, you want to pick up our interview there?
Yeah, okay. So, again, that's kind of where we stand now. The thing made landfall this evening as an extratropical system, and that's a whole other issue we'll talk about.
Brian's off the phone, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Brian, did you get the pizza ordered?
No, I got JB on.
Oh, look at there.
I've got two or three items I just picked up you guys might be interested in, but you've probably already heard them.
Tell us.
Lay it on us, JB. We can hear you now.
Okay. Recently, a wind gust of 115 miles an hour at the entry to New York Harbor. Mm. 29-foot waves every 15 seconds. At the Fire Island buoy, which has been very windy all day, they have a recent gust of 67 miles an hour with 31-foot waves every 15 seconds. The LaGuardia Airport floodwater has now reached the runways, and I don't know how that works, but it seemed to me that if the water gets very deep on those runways, it will ruin the lights at the pilots go by to land, and they may have to replace all those. I don't know. And that's all I have right now.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what we're going to do is I will let the folks that are watching this, they'll be able to watch the Fort Dix radar. We'll show some other graphics. In fact, I'll show a lot of things while we have this interview, but I thought this was important to air this. So this is Bill Murray earlier talking with Sean Potter.
All right, Sean Potter is a communication specialist with the National Weather Service. He's the executive producer of their online news and social media, and he joins us tonight from the National Weather Service in Upton, New York, outside New York City. Sean, it sounds like we're doing a lot better than you guys are up in New York. Right now, looking at the pictures, it looks pretty bad.
Hey, Bill. Thanks. It's good to be here. Yes, indeed, it has been quite a day, quite a night with Sandy, first hurricane, and now post-tropical cyclone Sandy, a very historic and unique event. And from where I've been sitting for the last, been here yesterday too, but I've been here for about 12 hours straight working nonstop at the National Weather Service New York Forecast Office in Upton, New York, about halfway on Long Island. It has been quite an interesting experience, especially because we have been right in the thick of it.
Now, Sean, is this one going to rank in the top couple of storms in the pantheon of storms that have affected New York City?
You know, I have a feeling, Bill, when all is said and done, that this will be probably up there, you know, and is one of the top, certainly, you know, most memorable storms. You know, we are just purely from the standpoint of the, you know, how unique it is in the sense that you know, it's a hybrid storm. As you know, it's transitioned this evening from a tropical to a post-tropical system. Incredibly huge wind field stretching, you know, the height of it, I believe, 485 mile out in any direction from the center with tropical storm force winds. You know, and then here on the Long Island and certainly in New York City, and we've been watching the news updates here from the forecast office of what's going on in the city. It's pretty amazing to see, for example, pictures of Lower Manhattan completely dark. They've shut the power down to buildings in Lower Manhattan, and storm surge already at the Battery, the lower tip of Manhattan, reaching unprecedented historic levels.
Yeah, just refresh the page. 13.72 feet now is the observed tidal height. It seems like it might be plateauing, but that's up another 0.4 of a foot in the last 20 minutes. And I guess we're now a little bit past high tide time at the Battery. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. I think just a little bit before 9 o'clock Eastern time was the predicted high tide at the Battery. So you know, we should see that cresting, but again at just unprecedented levels. We have been telling people yesterday, they were calling in and asking how this ranks in the historical context, and previously the highest water level that we'd seen at the Battery was from Hurricane Donna on September 12, 1960, and it was just over 10 feet at that time. So we're already several feet above that.
Well, so how serious or how far do you think that the flooding is going to extend inland into lower Manhattan?
I'm not sure exactly how far inland is going to extend. I mean, it's certainly going to be a threat along the coast and, lower lying areas. But we've been getting reports coming in, and we're still getting them coming in, preliminary reports of flooding all around, the area. And, so one thing that we've been telling people, and trying to convey to the media to pass on the message is, even though this is transition now, it's no longer to even a tropical system, it's the post-tropical system, the threat is still, not over. We've been seeing, you mentioned these incredibly high storm surge levels up and down the coast. In addition, we've had reports of wind gusts. Islip Airport, just a few miles from where I am right now, reported a peak wind gust of 78 knots, 90 miles an hour at 6:26 p.m. local time, I believe. We've got a threat of, albeit slight, of SPC had mention of tornadoes in their day one and I believe day two convective outlook. So there, and as if that weren't enough, we've got blizzard warnings in the Appalachians. So it's incredible. I think scope of hazards that we're dealing with from this one system.
Now, Sean, do you remember a tropical system that produced snow of this magnitude on its western flank? I know in 1804 there was one that I'd read about and studied in the Green Mountains, but is this unprecedented in modern times, or is it?
I believe it's certainly, from my experience, I can't recall any tropical system that's produced snow is in the mountains. I have to go back, and I'd be interested. I will go back and look. My interest in history, Bill, into the historical record to see about that turn of the century storm you mentioned. But yeah, when's the last time you've seen NHC put out any official products with the word snow in them?
Well, this really is turning out to be a fine hour for meteorology in general, because we started doing special shows last Tuesday night. So, we knew this system was going to be, significant and historic, and it's really turned out to do exactly what the forecaster said. As this week has gone on and you've been watching sort of the inside baseball behind the walls there, and the confidence levels, had to be rising as time went through. Was there any thought that maybe this thing would be a total bust, Sean?
Not in my mind, Bill. And and I can't speak necessarily for all the forecasters, and certainly they've all done an excellent job from where I stand. But one thing like you mentioned, it was interesting because I've been out here on Long Island helping support the activities both at the local office here and at our regional headquarters, which isn't far from Islip Airport, by the way, in Bohemia. Looking at, for example, you talk about the confidence levels increasing, and to me, one indication of that is every time NHC comes out with a new product or advisory package, is looking at how consistent the track path is and the cone of uncertainty narrowing in, and it has been a very interesting scenario and case, and one in which I think the National Weather Service has done an excellent job, and it's going to be interesting, I think, to see in the years and ahead how this is analyzed. I'm sure we're going to see lots of papers in the journals and BAMs and probably already even in the next few months with the AMS annual meeting. I wouldn't be surprised coming up in Austin in January if we've got a few preliminary presentations talking about some of the more interesting effects from Sandy.
Now, one thing that's been interesting to us is that, it seemed the Weather Service pretty early on took the tack that this was going to become a hybrid storm and did not issue tropical warnings north of North Carolina. Do you think in hindsight that's going to be something that might be questioned, Sean?
Well, listen, I think everybody, you know, there's going to be people who have different opinions about that. And, you know, I'm not one to certainly second guess or question the those decisions that were made. And I can imagine that there was a lot of, you know, they weren't made lightly. But I can certainly, you know, understand that, again, this is a very unprecedented kind of situation, because, you know, even when we've had systems in the past that have gone post-tropical and we go from NHC to HPC issue and advisories, you know, I can't remember, you know, a hybrid system like this, and something where it's that's happened right at the time when it's making landfall. So I can certainly understand the desire to, you know, have some consistency in terms of not having to issue one set of products and then dropping them, and you know, the confusion that might create. I mean, if for example, we had tropical products in effect and then suddenly they were canceled, some people might think that, you know, the worst is over, the threat is over, even though the only difference is just perhaps, you know, you know, the type of product that's being issued. It's certainly the, you know, I think in the final analysis, you know, and one of the things that I think we try to communicate to the public and is that, you know, it's really the impacts and the threats that they need to focus on. So whether, you know, you're dealing with you know, possible 90 mile an hour wind gusts from, you know, what is technically termed a tropical system or a post-tropical system, 90 mile an hour wind gust is still a 90 mile an hour wind gust.
Anything amazing you've seen from the social media side during this event, Sean?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you mention that, Bill, because there is one thing that I was looking at earlier, and let me see if I can want to bring that up and share that with you. In terms of social media, there was there's something. Actually, Chris Vaccaro, and I think you probably had him on before, or you know, he's our director of public affairs at the National Weather Service, and he's with NOAA Communications. Did an interesting interview with was quoted in PR Week and talking about how federal agencies have been using social media to help spread the preparedness message with Sandy. And in this article, there's mentioned that there's a social network, use a metric called TalkMeter that works on a scale of 1 to 10 to measure how popular a certain topic is across the platform. So, for example, with Hurricane Sandy, on this TalkMeter scale is up to 7.12, which is higher than either of the presidential candidates right now. They were both around between 3 and 4 on the talk meter, and so we've got certainly that's an indication of just how much people have been talking, tweeting, posting, and sharing about Sandy, which I think is good, because social media has really proven itself in the recent years as being an incredible way for people to not only share information and but also help you know, keep their friends and families safe and informed during such events.
Well, that's very interesting, and it's certainly been a lifeline for us getting information from the area. I know the local news media in New York City that we're watching on streaming, you know, the ability to get information through Twitter and different social media things has been phenomenal. Say hello to Jeff Tong, the Sioux there in Upton. He was a good friend.
He's standing just a few feet away from me as we speak, so I will give him your best.
Give him our best, and thank you for spending time with us tonight, Sean. Our prayers and thoughts will be with all the folks in the region there tonight in the next several days as you recover from this storm.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's been a pleasure talking to you, as always.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sean.
So of course, he has to toe the company
Bye-bye.
Line there with the talk about the warnings. But, and I know you guys hashed this out last night, but I think that it was a serious hole in the process not to have that information all weekend before this thing hit. So what do y'all think?
I tend to agree. I think this is, for one, there's no question that there will be a service assessment done. This will probably be the largest service assessment in Weather Service history. And my hope is that it will have a very large and very qualified, if not overqualified, team of people on it. And I think this will be one of the bigger sort of philosophical issues about it. My gut tells me that we might have had an even better success rate getting people out of there if we'd have just said, you know, this is going to be a hurricane all the way up, and let's not worry about the semantics. I think longer term, if we're going to do the, you know, you can't have multiple warnings, multiple products for the same conditions. And that's where we are. You either have a hurricane warning, you have a high wind warning and a coastal flood advisory and all this other stuff. You got to pick one path or the other and, you know, ditch one or the other so that we can have a consistent set of products, because two people in different parts of the country with the same conditions ought to be under the same whatever product that is. And by the way, I'm just watching on Twitter here. We're seeing now that it looks like the stock exchange is not underwater, as I mentioned earlier today.
Bill needs to get that off that super, because Bill's super says that the stock exchange is underwater. What I've been doing, for those watching, I've been scrolling the Twitter feed of my weather group. And as you can see, it is multiple sources reported the stock exchange is underwater. And now they're having to back up and say it's not underwater.
The Weather Service problem. In Upton hasn't changed that, though, still. Do we know that officially it's
CNBC yes. has a reporter there.
That's good.
Every network is reporting it's a bogus report. So
let me follow up on this with David, because David, you deal with clients who deal with these kinds of warnings. What does it do? Does it create any confusion amongst your folks? I mean, you're obviously sifting through and talking directly to them, but what are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's one of the services that we provide is to provide a consistent answer to all of our clients. I mean, there's a lot of media hype. I mean, if I was from CNN, I could be in the eye in the storm if I'm waving back and forth, if you see some of the press that goes on and things along those lines. But we want to remove that hype and just get down just to the facts of what's going on.
So are you getting those questions from people? Do some people say, sure. Well, wait a second, there isn't a tropical storm or hurricane warning. What am I worried about?
Exactly. And it's been a job to explain the difference between those. We've had the official statement from the Weather Service and everything else. But it's a challenge to decipher through all of that information. The primary thing was there was plenty of advance notice with this system. We've been watching it for a long period of time. And all of our clients have taken the precautions that they needed to protect the resources that they could.
I want to talk about you. We've known about it for a long time. It's a good comment. So I want to bring Brent in, if I may. To me, and we talked about this past couple of days, I think, Brent, that the consistency on the models and the convergence has been staggering, staggeringly good. What is your thought?
Yeah, I would agree. And in fact, I was just going to share. I was looking at that before the meeting started. And if you can see my screen, for those who can see it, let's see where there we go.
Yeah,
that's 42 hours worth of forecasts of surface pressure from the instance of the WRF model we run. We run essentially the same version that NSEP runs for the rapid update. And you look at that, and if I zoom in, you know, this is 40 going back 42 hours. The center forecast and the intensity has been remarkably consistent. I mean, all the center positions are within a 50 mile radius of one another, and they're all in about the 948 millibar intensity. So, you know, these strongly forced systems like this, you know, the models will do a really credible job. And, you know, this has become, you know, if it's up in the mid latitudes, become, you know, cold core, and they really have all handled it quite well. Which, you know, kind of brings me up to somebody who was talking about heavy snow. This is the forecast. The latest forecast is showing upwards of 30 inches of snow, you know, forecast for the Appalachians.
And I want to point out, by the way, for folks, for all the college meteorology students, he's using NMAP for that. So if you think that you get to hang that stuff up when you graduate, you work for a cool shop, you get to play with NMAP, and it can be a very useful tool.
Yeah.
So what do we see going forward then, Brent? I'm looking at the pressure trends and huge drops, obviously Pennsylvania, but much of central and western New York as well.
Yeah, I think so. I have another. I'll just show one more graphic here. I'm learning how to use this. This is a probability of heavy precipitation that we create by blending extrapolation techniques with numerical model output. And you see this whole trend of this heavy area of precipitation just drifting west over West Virginia, Northern Virginia, and then, of course, obviously in upstate New York. But even looking at the satellite loop that James has going on there, you see that there's this big blob on the west side of the storm that's going to continue to propagate west over the mountains. That could be much fairly serious, and I don't know that it'll get the same kind of press the downtown areas, you know, in the New York City area will get.
So after we just complimented all the models, do we have any thought on, I mean, this thing really got on a torus and moved, you know, momentum alone seems to suggest maybe a little further into Pennsylvania and Western New York. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't looked at the latest run on the actual the motion, but that's, I mean, it's done so well to this point. I think their official track lines up pretty well. It did seem like it picked up and moved west a lot quicker. I think this morning, where everybody was thinking it was going to be about this time that it was making landfall or later tonight, but
right.
it did really pick up.
Yeah. David, we talked a little bit yesterday broadly about the things that you do for your clients, but I'm interested in talking maybe about some of the logistics. It could be because your clients are not individual people, but businesses. And I wonder if you have any stories you could share about what they do to prepare, you know, 12 hours out, 24 hours out, 3 days out, things like that.
One of those things that's very industry unique. So if you're in the finance industry, you want to be the last person to close and the first person to open up so that you can begin to providing services to your customers. I had an interview with a reporter this afternoon that was talking about winners and losers from the storm. Obviously, the people that received damage from the storm are some of the losers, but and the insurance companies that have to insure some of these claims. But if we look at the amount of economic stimulus that occurs in the construction industry that occurs, you know, people working overtime to restore power. We're talking about power outages here that are such widespread. I mean, with a classic storm, we would expect those wind speeds to be towards the center. It's going to cause a path of damage, but what we're seeing now, and let me share this screen real quickly, is just the widespread nature. This is, and Brett can comment on this because it's coming from a lapse analysis that his group produces for us. And we're looking at wind speeds here. So we've got wind speeds that are ramping up in the 60 mile per hour range, widespread, all the way up the coast north of Boston, down over New York, Philadelphia, and it continues all the way down into Virginia and the Carolinas, not to mention the winds that are coming off the lake right now and the Great Lakes. As the pressure gradient really increases, this is going to be a long time before we can get power back on.
What other commercial clients are paying attention to this? So obviously the power companies, and they a couple of days out or even hours out will move assets around to various places. But are there others that are paying close attention to that?
Well, just to comment quickly on some of our power and utility customers.
Yeah.
Typically speaking, they beg, borrow, and steal from other states.
Right.
You know what I mean? They'll send crews and things along those lines. But because of the widespread nature of this, they're pretty much on their own at this point in time. And resources, the way they are, they've trimmed down staff. There's a lot. It's going to take a while to get some of this power restored again.
So what other industries are paying close attention to this?
Well, obviously, we've got a lot of insurance industry customers that are trying to figure out how to pre-position their claim staff and what their total potential. A lot of the things that we do is we'll combine policy information from the insurance industry with actual wind output and with the forecast track. So it not only shows their potential exposure, but it also shows their actual exposure from after the storm passes. And so we're already starting to do that analysis now.
Do they move assets into place ahead of time, or do they wait until after the bulk of it has passed?
Well, they'll pre-position some assets, but a lot of it they'll wait till after the bulk of the storm has passed, and then they start sending in adjusters, you know, and those types of people to speed up their claims process and keep their customers happy.
Well, and also, this is Brent. I would chime in a little bit here. We deal with some aviation clients, and think about the far-reaching impacts of the storm. I mean, as of yesterday, there were something like 8,000 or 9,000 flights canceled. There's a major aviation conference going on in Florida this week. But you think about the impact on our air traffic system just because of the major hubs having flights that are stranded and can't get aircraft moved around. So that's another, you know, big impact that's going to be felt across the country from this.
Mm-hmm. The last track, David, from the Hurricane Center shows us a hard right once it gets out of New York. What about New England?
Yeah, they're going to obviously.
I'm sorry, I meant Brent, but either of you could answer.
Go ahead, Brent.
What was the question?
We take a hard right on the latest NHC track. What about the New England states?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the latest run, and it does show that hard right turn, but, you know, it starts getting more diffuse, you know, storm-wise. So I don't think it'll be as intense, but as Dave said earlier, you know, you've got really broad areas of significant winds combined with, you know, 7, 8, 9 inches of rain. You know, there'll be heavy precip, so the ground's going to get soft. You know, you see more trees come down and that sort of thing.
Right.
James, let
me say this. If you have questions, it's going to be easier for us because so many of my screens are tied up with things I need to see here. Drop it on Twitter, hashtag WeatherBrains, if you got a question, and I will go over and stick that search item up.
I've actually got it already up, James, so I'll keep an eye on that for you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Nate. So again, hashtag will be WeatherBrains for questions. Brian, you want to say something?
Kevin, I have a couple of comments for you.
Yes.
Oh, lay it on me.
No, I'm here.
Yes. I wanted to make a couple of comments. First of all, was on Alabama Power's tweets, and Alabama Power, of course, is not affected by Sandy down here, but crews, I don't know how many in number, but crews from Alabama Power actually were pre-positioned in Maryland yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah, we saw probably.
As a matter of fact, 50. Alabama Power posted.
Sorry, Brian. We saw 50 trucks heading north on Saturday afternoon, obviously in that direction.
Yeah, they arrived, according to the time on the tweets, they arrived 22 hours ago. So that's, you know, about this time last night. So they're safe up there riding out the storm, and they're prepared to respond. And then I have a question for Kevin.
Yes, sir.
Why would you even be looking at the National Hurricane Center's plot of a storm they don't even recognize?
Oh, this is good. Now, if you missed last night's show, Brian got really cranky. There were no hurricane warnings for the New Jersey coast.
I'm cranky about this. Yeah, I'm cranky about this because I think there is a huge hole in here, and I understand that there are technical issues relative to the meteorology, but you know what? If issuing statements is going to cause a problem, what in the world do they think not issuing warnings is going to do? I just think this whole thing about, oh, we're going to be technically correct meteorologically is a bunch of crap.
Yeah, like I said, this is going to get reviewed in the post-storm assessment, and I hope it, like I said, I think it's a bad call, but I appreciate the fact that at least they made it early and they were consistent. They're consistently...
Yeah. But here's the deal, all right? So you've got a hurricane as of, what, 3 o'clock this afternoon within 50 miles of the New Jersey coast, and there was no hurricane warning.
And there's no hurricane warning,
Something has to be reviewed, and then magically, this thing made the transformation to post-tropical.
Fox guarding the hen house.
Yeah, and between you and me, I wouldn't trust a survey team unless they get a lot of non-Weather Service NOAA people on there, because they're gonna whitewash this and make it look like it was a good decision.
I've heard from a number of folks on various teams that some of that does happen, that headquarters...
Oh, listen, I've been on them, Nate. I've been on them. There's wordsmithing that goes on.
Yep.
All right, but let me ask David and Brent your opinion, since you're not in the Weather Service. You saw what happened. The Hurricane Center did not issue hurricane warnings. They declared this a post-tropical cyclone literally 40 minutes before landfall. Do you think they did the right thing?
Well, I'll jump in. I mean, I kind of share the same sentiment. I mean, I get really tired of the semantics. When it comes down to warning the public, they just need to know what the impacts are, you know, and we can put in the discussion. Yes. And I, you know, when I worked in NOAA, we had those same discussions at the lab all the time about, you know, of course we were in the middle of Colorado. It was easy for us to armchair quarterback there, but, you know, we have to be focused on saving lives and saving property. The meteorology terminology needs to come second. You know, that's great for these discussions that you and I are in right here, but is not helpful to the public one whit. And that's why we have the services we do, to try to translate, you know, from the weather speak to the industry speak. And I'm sure Dave has a lot of experience on that with his weather ops team.
That's correct. And it's all about sending a consistent message. And I think that's where they've really fallen down during this event, is we can call it what we want to call it, but the impacts are all the same. And it's important that we have that consistent message out there amongst agencies. Yes, there was a handover when it became an extra tropical system, and they handed over that. You know, we're still getting track updates and things along those lines. But for not having the warnings out, that's kind of that. We need to take a look at that.
It's like the guy whose house gets trashed by straight line winds. It doesn't matter whether it was straight line or a tornado. His house is trashed. And I think if we're shifting, if the Weather Service is serious about shifting toward a decision support model, then we need to get away from it. And somebody, Umaguma, tweeted it on Twitter a little while ago. It matters not what you call it. It matters what it is and what it's doing. And we're letting jargon and specific terminology get in the way of effective communication. This is something that we're getting to the point where, do you want to be right, or do you want people to get the message and do what you want them to do? And I don't know that we could do both at the same time here.
Well, I think it's actually harmful even at times, because, you know, people hear, they associate words, you know, they associate hurricane with a bad storm. Mm-hmm. And if suddenly it's not called a hurricane anymore, we've kind of created this whole dichotomy now. You know, we're actually causing more problems. So, you know,
what do you
why
think,
not?
I'm sorry. What do you guys think this is going to do to the discussion of a couple of weeks ago with regard to the Weather Channel and their naming storms? I mean, they're down 2-0 here. Ugh. The one up in the Northern Plains and then this one. And I mean, if you believe in such things, you got to say, wait a second, somebody's trying to give you guys a message, but will they evaluate it, you wonder?
I'd love to think they would, and I'd love to think they'd abandon it, but I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
Change the name to post-tropical, it's still going to be overdose of tropical air.
Yep. Because it doesn't matter. I mean, you're getting 80-mile-an-hour wind gusts and 13, almost 14 feet of water in Battery Park. It doesn't matter what it's called. It's a nor'easter. It's a hurricane. It's a superstorm. Weather Channel's abandoned all of that. They're calling it a superstorm now.
Yeah. So, and it's still sandy.
And it's still sandy. Thank goodness.
Right. So what is the Weather Service calling it? Is it
post-tropical cyclone
Sandy?
Yep.
And the Weather Channel's calling it what?
Superstorm Sandy.
Brother.
I have a question for you guys, and this I want to take this in a slightly different direction here, but one of the producers for one of the television stations here in the Raleigh market just tweeted and said, loving social media, but it doesn't match the power of live images on television. Is right or wrong? Go.
All right. So here's the first problem. All right. This has been an issue today. All right. So let me just show you the best of. Okay. Hang on here. I'm going to cruise over here, and I know there's a lot of different sites. This is the Mashable. The 7 fake photos you're sharing on social media.
Uh-oh.
And I'll kind of describe this for those people that are not watching. This is from Mashable. Number one is the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. All right. You guys see that? Very touching. And goodness, that brings up incredible emotion. But the problem is that photograph was not taken today during Sandy.
Yeah.
All right, that photograph was taken apparently in September, like has nothing to do with Sandy. True, it is a great story. Again,
and they're standing out there tonight, right now.
Right, they are.
Yes.
But again, the photograph is not from today. In fact, that image is from today, earlier this morning, before the weather got bad. All right, how about this one? I've got to describe this because a lot of people are listening to us and can't see these images.
Oh, my
goodness.
This is showing
Lady Liberty, the Statue of Liberty, with these, you know, mega waves blowing in there, and they've got some fake New York Channel 1 live cam at 12 p.m., and that was from the film The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah.
That was from a motion picture. And then we have, you know, the amazing picture of Hurricane Sandy descending into New York, and that was a year ago. And my favorite is probably this one. This one has been all over the place. So, you know, you got this shelf cloud thing, and you got this boat, and you got the Statue of Liberty out there.
That's the one Drew Brees sent out, isn't it?
All these celebrities have been sucked into that one. And, there's actually some pretty funny stuff out there. Before we close, I'll show you some of the funnies out there. But, you know, here you go. This McDonald's in Virginia Beach flooded, all right? So it's got, you know, water up to the counter and Ronald McDonald floating away.
Nope, that's German art.
Yeah, that was from a 2009 German art thing.
Wow.
So, you know, that in itself is problematic. People are hitting that retweet button or share on Facebook without even thinking about it. And look, I'll be the first to say, I know I have sent out some that should not have been sent out. Now, I try and vet these things very, very firmly. So that's one problem when it comes to social media. A lot of what you see is not true.
Let me answer Nate's question, though. I think the comment that you – what was the comment? Can you read that again?
The comment was that the television – the Twitter and social media, it's been fascinating to watch this unfold there, but nothing beats the pictures on live television, the compelling nature of live TV.
I think that is a protectionist type comment.
You think?
I think I've been hanging out with you too much because that was my first reaction.
It's unrealistic of the future. But the bigger point that I would make about that is that, and a lot of people in the old media model still do this, there is no one correct answer anymore. For some people, social media is going to be their primary source of information. Now, and for a lot of people, they're going to take in multiple sources of information. But some people, it's going to, that's right. Some people, it's going to be television. Some people, it's going to be Facebook. Some people, it's going to be Twitter. Some people, it's going to be none. Some people, it's going to be both. And those who continue to think, oh, well, this is better. This is exactly, I keep going into this old Clayton Christensen stuff, the innovator's dilemma. But what happens in these old line industries, the new upcoming disruptive industries sneak in from below. They take these little tiny chunks out, and then all of a sudden one day you wake up and you go, ooh, where do these guys come from? And that's the kind of mentality that goes there. So I think what the mistake they're making is trying to be protectionist, number one, but also not recognizing that all of these other sources, they're out of the bottle and they're not coming back, and you need to address them. As a segue, I'll make a comment about some of the coverage that I saw. I made an interesting observation. I didn't really immerse myself in a great deal, but for about an hour and a half in the middle of the afternoon, at probably what could be called the height of the effects, the wind and rain effects in New York, I watched one of the three, the four network O&Os, and then for about an hour and a half after that, I watched a different one. And in that entire 2.5 hour time span, I saw the weather guy one time on one of those stations. Mm-hmm. And this is a comment I've made before, and it's for the broadcasters. And you need to rein in the news people on these things, because these things will transition to a news event. But in many cases, they're still weather events. And that was what struck me this time. I didn't see the weather guy only one time. And when I saw him, he was talking about storm surge along the coast and not talking about rain bands or any kind of the stuff that was falling or wind speeds or any of that. And then I never saw him again.
Yep. Anybody else want to chime in? Bill? Brian?
I think,
I still think television is important. very important. I mean, looking at a Twitter feed will never beat. Like, I've got up on the screen now for those watching the show, I've got Channel 7 in New York. They've had some very compelling stuff. They interviewed those firefighters right about the time the show started. It was very compelling. They had to rescue these people on the roof. There was a fire. You're not going to get that on Twitter. Television will always be, in my opinion, the primary media here. Now, you know, whether you watch it on the internet like we're doing now, or you watch it over the air or cable or satellite or whatever, but you cannot beat, you know, what local television provides. And the other thing, too, you know, the local television stations, they understand the people, the culture, and the geography. And you cannot adequately cover weather if you do not. And I see a lot of these, you know, blow-dried boobs that come into these zones like this that don't understand. Let's say you send me, and I'm not a blow, I'm a bald boob, all right? You send me to New York City to cover this story. I don't know anything about New York City. And, yeah, I was up there in August, and I go up there from time to time. But come on. I would be very inadequate. So, you know, sending in these chase teams that are going to be live tweeting the arrival of you know, Sandy, that they're coming in there from Oklahoma in Kansas or, you know, Arkansas, Alabama, whatever. I like to hear from people that actually live there and understand it, know where these places are. They need to be on there talking about things I don't understand, right, that local people do. So I think you're never going to beat local television as a primary source for, you know, I don't think it's going to overtake Twitter, you know, some of this crazy stuff we see on here, or Facebook. Having said that, yes, but social media is wonderful. I'm a big advocate of it. Goodness, I've been on there all day today. But still, local TV is good.
You get bits and pieces in social media, and television does at least try to give you a comprehensive overview, you know, with the local flavor like you were talking about, James. You know, but we were seeing things on social media tonight 20-25 minutes before it would appear on Channel 7 in New York City.
All right.
And I'll agree with that. And again, what people, just so you'll know, those that are watching, when I'm showing this Twitter feed, that is my weather group. I'm big into using groups, and these are just weather people around the country. And this is just some good stuff. Some very good stuff is there. And it's a supplement. Yeah, live television, Twitter, you know, it all combines for an amazing experience. What I know now about this storm, I could dream about this 25 years ago. It's remarkable.
Well, it's time to ask the all-important question. Did anyone tell Diane Sawyer? I thought a little of them. I thought they pulled out a lot of the stops and seemed to have some pretty aggressive coverage this time. You know, whether it's a wake of comments that we made before, I don't know, but I thought they did a good job.
Ginger Z was
Go ahead, JB.
Ginger Z was wading in water almost up to her knees this afternoon.
Yeah.
And again, Ginger, I think, has done a great job. We have conversed a little bit on Twitter today, and, you know, for her, she is going through the biggest storm of her life, and I think she's done a great job. The only problem with ABC that they – I don't know how it works in some of the other markets, but in our market, we're in the central time zone. They had a 30-minute newscast, as always, at 5:30. We had a local newscast at 6. Then at 6:30, we typically go to Wheel of Fortune. Well, ABC had another 30 minutes at 6:30, which preempted Wheel of Fortune, and I wanted to be sure I was out of the television station so I would not have to hear the hate mail or the hate calls coming in. It was brutal, man.
So God, I got a couple. A couple of questions coming in on Twitter, speaking of. One, I think I know what the answer to this question will be in this group, but I'll ask it anyway. Chemist Rachel asks, what is your response when people say Sandy is being overhyped?
No.
Well, in my opinion, it's not. Yeah. I think Irene was overhyped last year. And again, we talked a lot about that a lot on this show. And I know there were fatalities, and I know the flooding was serious. And yes, it was a hurricane. Any hurricane is serious. But you had these same guys on there talking about how that was going to be the storm of the century. And, you know, all this hyperbole that was just pie-in-the-sky stuff, and none of that happened. And I really think that a lot of people didn't do anything this time because of the hype surrounding Irene. I think, I'll be honest with you, I think everybody's done a good job. Mm-hmm. You know, now the biggest issue is that Hurricane Center decision not to issue hurricane warnings. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest problem I think everybody here has. But other than that, I think the media, I think the Weather Service has done a very good job of communicating the danger, but yet a lot of people just didn't leave. And the other issue, I guess, is Bloom. Bloomberg did not issue the mandatory evacuation Saturday
that
night.
That left me scratching my head, and I have to wonder. I mean, he's well-connected. He's got – I mean, he could pick up the phone and call any of these folks at any point, being the mayor of New York City. Having said that, I got to wonder if he did, and I got to wonder if not having a hurricane warning affected that at all.
I don't know. But other than that, I do think that, you know, I don't know. In answer to that question, I don't think this has been hyped up. All right. I think the media has done a pretty good job this time.
I think if the storm were to stop right now, which it's not going to, I mean, we concentrate on the eye coming ashore, but there's 12, 18, 24 hours or longer of the storm that hasn't materialized yet. If it stopped right now, it wouldn't be overhyped, looking at all the damage that we're seeing. Yeah, I mean, and we're at the halfway point.
That brings up a good point. I mean, do you guys feel like we overhype the eye of the storm?
Yes.
I mean, we worry far too much about landfall.
Yes.
That's another meteorological technicality. I mentioned this on 99.9 The Fan here in Raleigh today. It's a meteorological technicality that we like to talk about. Where did it make landfall? At the end of the day, even with a smaller compact storm, it doesn't matter quite as much. And here, it absolutely doesn't. You're seeing hurricane force wind gusts across half the East Coast from Northern Virginia on up to Massachusetts.
Yeah, people get confused by the hurricane cones. I get asked questions about, is that the size of the storm? Is that the track of the storm? Because we focus so much on verifying the center of a storm as opposed to verifying the impacts of storms. Yeah,
Esco did a study a couple of years ago where she went and had people draw what they had seen on television and then explain to her what it all meant or what they thought it meant. Huh. It was fascinating to think, to get into these people's heads. We look at that and we automatically know it's uncertainty. The storm could go anywhere. It's the 66th percentile, yada, yada, yada. But let me tell you, the public, most people, non-experts, don't look at it that way. They think it's expanding. They think it's getting bigger, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the misinterpretations of that graphic are phenomenal, and I think you're onto it. You're nailing it straight on. I think we talk too much about the center. We talk too much about what category it is, and both of those things need to stop.
I agree, but this is an anomalous situation because it was so big, and the greatest effects are going to be in other places as well. And I have to think time of day and proximity has something to do with it as well. You're talking about pictures during daylight, late afternoon, mid to late afternoon into the evening, toward the newscasts, and because it was so broad and because it's not practical to send somebody out into the Poconos of Pennsylvania and wait for trees to fall over, they've got to go to the coast and focus on that thing. And that's what we've trained them to do with tropical systems over the years. So circumstances certainly seem to play an interesting part in that. But yeah, I agree with a lot of it was probably left behind.
Okay, tell you what, fellas, what we're going to do here, we are going to roll a couple of one of our regular segments, which is, and again, this is our regular podcast. No, a lot of people are watching live. We've had huge numbers of viewers, and we thank you. We picked up a lot of new listeners, hopefully, but the recorded version of this goes out via all the podcast clients, and we have a little segment that Brian has been doing for 7 years called Weather Brains 101, and I really think at some point, I think producer JP is the candidate for the job, is to catalog all of Brian's Weather Brains 101s and make it searchable, because this has been great information. So on top of everything else, the producer has one more thing on his plate now. We're going to roll this week's Weather Brains 101. We're going to come back and we're going to go to JB Elliott. Traditionally, JB does a little weather roundup. And again, we're doing this on October the 29th. We have an email segment, and maybe tonight we'll do kind of a hybrid Twitter email thing, because we have email and we got a lot of input coming in from Twitter tonight using the hashtag WeatherBrains. And we have Picks of the Week. This is where everybody goes around and shares something weather related. But again, right now we're going to pause for Weather Brains 101, and we'll come back with all the other stuff as Weather Brains rolls along.
Weather Brains 101 with Professor Peters.
The circulation of air around the globe explains how storm systems travel over the Earth's surface. The global circulation would be simple if the Earth did not rotate
The rotation was not tilted relative to the sun, and the Earth had no water. Simpler but boring. So if the Earth did not rotate, the sun would heat the entire surface, but where the sun was directly overhead, the ground and air would be heated more. Thus, the equator would become very hot, with the hot air rising into the upper atmosphere. That air would then move toward the poles, where it would become cold and sink, returning to the equator. A large area of high pressure would be at each pole, with a large belt of low pressure around the equator. But the Earth does rotate, the axis of the Earth is tilted, and there is more land mass in the northern hemisphere than in the southern hemisphere. So, the actual global pattern is more complicated. Instead of one large circulation between the poles and the equator, there are actually three circulations. These are the Hadley cell, the Farrell cell, and the polar cell. In the Hadley cell, low-latitude air moves toward the equator, where with heating, the air rises vertically, with movement toward the pole in the upper atmosphere. This forms a large convection cell that dominates tropical and subtropical climates. Now, in the next episode of Weather Brains 101, we'll complete the global picture with descriptions of the Farrell and polar cells and hook it all together. Inquiring minds want to know, so drop your weather questions to question@weatherbrains.com.
So one of the things we do every week, we have a show title, and according to Brian, who names the shows, I'm a Bald Boob is the leading candidate. Is that right, Brian? Now, Bill, you got this week in weather history for us?
Yeah, you know, I'm out of history this week, James.
Yeah, I bet. We've all been awfully busy. We'll kind of get back to the regular schedule next week.
I think we're watching it right now.
I think this tops anything we could talk about on weather.
I have a historical question for you then, Bill. Is this at 940 or whatever it would be deemed once it hit the lowest pressure for the northeastern part of the country, tropical
system?
Yes.
I think at 940.
North of Cape Hatteras.
That's right. 945 was the worst, you know, that we knew about at least. And this certainly is shaping up to live up to, you know, when we were looking at these models a week ago, we thought it was nuts to think we'd have a 937 millibar, you know, storm, and we did.
Hey, but while I'm thinking about this, let me just ask Brent real quick. We'll kind of use your time, Bill, when you normally do This Week in Weather History. Brent, one of the questions a lot of people have been asking, and again, we're going to get the email and the Twitter in just a minute. Why was the European on this so much before the American model, the GFS, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, the Europeans have a great team of scientists that have been working for years and years focused on one thing. I've been over to visit ECMWF, and what they've really done well is they take the best modelers from each of the European Union countries, and they work together for usually like a year sabbatical. So they've got major time and expertise investment to do one thing, and that's to do medium range modeling. So they have a very, very sophisticated and complex data assimilation system that's very computationally expensive, and they have a lot of horsepower to run these. So that's generally why the European model tends to outdo the GFS. I did hear a report, however, today from one of our colleagues over at the University of Oklahoma that a lot of the verification is starting to show that the American, the GFS model, is actually becoming on par with the ECMWF. So, you know.
Now, I keep hearing people say that the GFS has done amazingly well for the past week because of this Rex block.
Yeah. Well, another interesting thing, I was out at a conference in Boulder this past week, and I was speaking with a scientist who works at the what's called the Development Test Center, where they do evaluations of models and whatnot. And she said that the GFS has actually been the best the best model forecast of tropical storms in the last couple of years in the United States, even better than the regional models. That's different than comparing, obviously, GFS to European model. But, the NSEP continues to make good strides. I mean, it's a tough problem, you know, with models. You fix one thing and, you know, something else, you know, it causes a negative effect somewhere else. And we always like to say, you know, the modelers, you know, when the models are wrong, the forecasters are disappointed. disappointed. When they're right, the modelers are amazed. So that's kind of how I.
Here's the question, though. It seems like the European caught on to this Northeast U.S. landfall and seemed to hang on to it a lot more quickly and a lot more consistently than the GFS did. This is just one storm, and obviously with Debbie earlier this year, it was almost the exact opposite. The GFS pretty much kicked the Europeans' tail. But with this one, it seemed to be on it, you know, even early last week into the previous weekend. Have we really caught up, or are we still catching up? And you know, what about the? I hear a lot about, well, they got better computers than we do.
Yeah, well, I mean, the more robust computing power really comes into the way they assimilate data. Now, you know, they only run two cycles of the ECMWF a day because of that. And you wonder if there's a little bit of yo-yo effect. You know, you get into a lot of the complex, the physics and the science of, you know, nighttime stable boundary layers and things that cause models problems. And so, you know, you wonder if you get more consistency from the ECMWF only running really twice a day, but spending, I don't know if this is still the case. When I visited out there, you know, quite a long time ago, actually 10, 15 years ago, I think they were spending something like 60 to 70% of their computational time just on the initializing the model, running these, you know, these four dimensional variational. Basically, you're running a model backwards and forwards in time. And I would have to think that that's probably the main difference. You know, obviously there's differences in physics and whatnot. They are running higher resolution. You know, that probably helps somewhat. So that's where the computers come into play. You can run the physics more explicitly. You can do a better job of assimilation. And, you know, they do things differently. So that's what, as you noted, there are times when the GFS does better and times when the ECMWF does better. There's also a general perception, which has been backed up by fact, but, you know, once something has a reputation, it kind of carries that reputation. So even as we start to catch up, you know, it's going to be in the minds of forecasters if the EC is the better model. And again, it may very well be. So you have to overcome both the science and the perception over time.
Thanks.
Okay, tell you what, fellas, let's go to J.B. Elliott, the world's greatest weatherman. J.B.'s our mentor. And J.B., any thoughts, any notes? It's time for your weather roundup.
Okay, I made this weather roundup much shorter than usual because I knew we would want to talk about the hurricane only. But the hottest in the nation yesterday was 95 at Octillo Wells, California. Coldest this morning, 14 at Tomahawk, Wisconsin. The coldest in Alaska, 8 below zero at Gulkana. The NOAA survey today by a satellite shows that all of Alaska is now covered by snow. Two-thirds of Canada is covered by snow. All of Greenland is snow-covered. And there's widespread snow cover across the North Pole down into Northern Europe. And sometimes if we have some of the overpole cold fronts and cold air outbreaks, that will hurt us later in the winter. But a few notes I've heard within the last hour from New York City. Part of the Atlantic City boardwalk has been washed away. Now 5 fatalities in New York City. And several New York City police officers had to be rescued. And there is 4 feet of water in the East River Tunnel, I believe they said. And I want to come in. Shepard Smith from the Fox News Channel, he did a two-hour coverage this afternoon, none of it overhyped and all of it very informative. And I want to ask James one question. What is a bald-headed boob?
Yeah, put it this way. You're looking at one right
there
now.
There you go.
All right. Thanks for that, JB. And I tell you what, let's go right into the good old email inbox. And I would imagine you're overflowing with questions this evening. Nate, you're the email guy, so the floor goes to you.
All right, let's skip through a couple of these real quick. Had a couple of guest suggestions, one from Andrew Tillman. Appreciate that. We'll put that one in the queue. Question from Craig asking about whether or not the Weather Channel would give it another name and how confusing that would be. Thankfully, it does not seem like they're going to do that. We got a listener survey response from Scott Davidson. He is from Sydney, Australia, down under, and I am butchering that accent, but he's listening to us. We appreciate
that. Was
that.
Bad, man.
He is a lightning strike survivor. Pretty cool fact there.
Really?
And he found out about it. And James, you opened the show by saying this was the only podcast, but he found out about us through another podcast, the Hurricane Hollow Barometer Bob Show. So we appreciate the mention over there.
I thought Bob Show was like live. It's not a traditional podcast, is it?
I don't know, but that's where he found out about it. So that's good. Let's see. Found out that Google is doing public alerts. If you haven't seen this, go to google.com/public alerts, and you can see all kinds of stuff there. They're processing all manner of weather data. We talked about this before, but the cartoon XKCD, the webcomic XKCD, had their one this past week was about the 2004 hurricane season and some of the, for lack of a better word, punchy comments that made some of the official forecast discussions from the Hurricane Center. Really, really fun stuff if you enjoy weather history and enjoy hurricanes. That was pretty cool. As well. And without the other videos and some things, we'll skip all of that in the interest of time. I do want to hit a couple of questions that came in. One for
Wait. We have a breaking news email.
Go ahead.
Oh, wait a minute. Stand
breaking
by.
Breaking news.
Stand by.
Go to play the jingle.
We have a breaking news
breaking
email.
Breaking news email.
Please stand by.
We interrupt this program for a CBS Radio Net Alert Bulletin.
This just in from Andrew Thompson. It's a post from Dick DiBartolo and his Facebook page that we had to read. Dick is, of course, a friend of the show from the...
He's in New York?
Yeah, he's in New York from the GizWiz program on Leo Laporte's network. But he posted he was at the marina at 9:30 for the astronomical high tide surge. No power at the marina. The Hudson has flowed over into Riverside Park, and people walking through it said it was about 2.5 feet deep. He said he was on the overlook above where the restaurant there is. The marina office had been evacuated since about 6 p.m. because of a foot of water over the platform on which it sits. At 9:30, the water was up to the portholes in the back office, so there must have been several feet of water there. So got to get that report in from Dick DiBartolo, friend of the show.
In fact, listen to this.
Hi, this is Dick DiBartolo, man's man is trying to end the GizWiz. Since I use weather every day, I listen to Weather Brains.
So we have
Echo for free.
That's good.
A couple of Twitter questions.
A lot of money for
it's
Echo.
Very professional.
Go, Nate.
All right, a couple of Twitter questions here. One of them for Professor Peters. What is the difference between a storm tropical and an extra tropical storm? And why is this change important?
That's going to make Brian cranky. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah. Well, the last part of your question is, I don't know that it makes it all that important because as we have pointed out already on this show, you know, it's the impact that counts. But there's a couple of big things. One is the extra tropical is cold core and the tropical is warm core. And, you know, I'm not sure
Let me ask you guys this. Maybe Brent, since he's deep into this, what mandatory level, if you could pick one, what would you look to determine if the system is cold core or warm core?
Yeah. Wow. That's probably a better forecast question for Dave since he should have that more operational. If I'm looking at model data, I mean, the first place I look is up at the upper levels, right? I mean, if there's a low and it's deep all the way up to 300 millibars, it's definitely a cold core low.
Yep. Dave, what say you?
And it has to do with the pooling of the warm air and the stack of the system. And one of the things that we're looking at right now as the system became extra tropical is what's fueling it. And it's no longer being, I mean, it's the dynamics in itself are taking care of the storm. And I don't think it really matters in this particular instance.
But again, if you're sitting at the Hurricane Center and you're having to decide what's the magical moment where this thing becomes extra tropical, how would you determine if you could just pick one thing that you'd look at? What would you pick?
Probably when you have to stop issuing warnings for it.
That may show up in a service assessment near you sometime.
Next question.
Next question.
And I think this is a no-brainer, but I'll throw it out there. Will Sandy, the name Sandy, be retired? All in favor?
Yes. No question.
I think
there's a high likelihood.
Yeah. Yes. This going in retire at the Weather Channel probably wants to retire it now and move on to Athena, but. And that is that's it for the questions. Of course, if you have any other questions before we wrap up, shoot them to us on Weather Brains. Of course, if you have a question in between podcasts, you're listening and you want to shoot us a note, shoot us a note there at Weather Brains on Twitter, or head to our page, weatherbrains.com. You can find us on Facebook, and you can also send us an email, old school snail email, email@weatherbrains.com.
All right, we're going to do Picks of the Week right now. This is where we all go around the table, and for Dave and Brent, I'll give you fair warning. Now, Dave came through last night. He was on the special we did last night, but we're going to ask you to pick something weather-related. This can be a website, hardware, a book, anything related to weather. So we're going to do that in just a moment. We always lead off the Picks of the Week segment with the fog bank from our pal Sky Dave.
Hello, Weather Brains listeners. This is the Sandy edition of the Fog Bank. You can find these links on my blog, skydaver.blogspot.com. First, a couple of links unrelated to the hurricane. Local Yokel WX posted a satellite picture showing fog in the valleys of western North Carolina on October 5th. Mike Moss posted an interview that he did with Scott Toma, author of Out of the Blue, about the Tracy, Minnesota F5 tornado in 1968. Now on to Sandy. Earth Observatory and NASA visualizations had rapid scan images of Sandy from GOES 14. What I find interesting about these videos is that the clouds seem to be streaming opposite the rotation at the far western side of the images. Also from Mike Moss, we've got some footage from Derek Sibley of Sandy. There are several stories about fake pictures from Sandy. This one comes from Mashable. Thanks for listening. Skydaver out.
Interface complete.
All right, thanks, Skydaver. And what I'm going to do here, I'm going to lay my pick out here, and then I'm going to kind of give the show to Kevin, in that I am the, I believe, the first element in our 10 o'clock newscast. I'm in the central time zone, so I've got to step across the hall and do some commercial television here, which is quite boring compared to this. But I've been showing during the show tonight, for those that are watching, my Twitter weather group, and I just thought people have asked, can you see that? Yes. And that's going to be my pick of the week. It's I've just selected a lot of accounts. I don't know how many are in there. There's a bunch, and it gets very busy on a day like today, but it's really good information. It's a cross-section of private sector, government, National Weather Service, broadcast meteorologists, some chaser groups and things like that. So that will be my pick of the week. So having said that, Kevin, I'm turning the floor over to you.
Oh, that's big time.
Because I'm leaving my post.
That's big time danger, but I will try and keep up the standard. All right, let's go down the line. Bill, you want to do a pick of the week?
Yeah, I just sent you an email too, Kevin, because I can't screen share for some reason. But it's my my crazy pick of the week, since we've been talking about all these pictures that people tweet out. But the one thing that I found really useful today was the NOAA Tide page. It's basically at tidesonline.nos.noaa.gov. That's my pick. It's got lots of tide gauges all around the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico coasts, and it was instrumental today in keeping up with what was going on. Now, the tide at the Battery is dropping right now. It's at 12.27, but it's real important to note that they've got to go through another high tide in the morning. And I worry about what's going to happen sometime around 9 o'clock tomorrow morning when that second high tide comes in. And if you get a chance to share my email picture I sent you, Kevin, I almost tweeted that one out, but I saved pushing the trigger because of what James said a little bit earlier. So
all right,
my second pick.
I'll put that up in just a minute. Brent, you want to do a pick of the week for us?
Sure. Well, you know, I talked a lot about models, and I could say the pick of the week is how well the models did, but I have a past of working with satellite data, and I love the rapid scan stuff that we do off GOES. Mm-hmm. But something that doesn't get a lot of press is the stuff from our polar orbiting satellites. I used to work for the Defense Meteorological Satellite Program, and the replacement system that was going to be on a system called IMPOS is this instrument called VIRS, and I'm going to share this picture because I think it's cool. You can see the nighttime lights, a very unique high-resolution image from 450 miles above the surface as Sandy is moving in, and you can see all the lights of the cities below through the thin cirrus.
That shot's going to be really cool tomorrow night when the power's out.
Yeah. I thought, well, you know, they use this for many years with DMSP. They NGDC and Boulder collected nighttime lights, and they're able to do differences and find where there's power outages and where there's fires. And you don't think about that much from a meteorological satellite, but it's a really neat capability. And this is courtesy of the University of Wisconsin, and I wanted to show it tonight. So.
You know, what's fascinating about that, too, and for those who are listening, there's a tremendous amount of dry air on the south and east and even now northeast side of this thing. And so it's continued to wrap around. And it was kind of amazing to me. And I guess this speaks to the, you know, maybe it's not a tropical system anymore, is the amount of dry air wrapping around and how quickly the hard rain shut off along the coastline a little earlier this afternoon. I thought that was fascinating to watch.
Yeah, so. It was almost like a little warm core system in the middle of a bigger extra tropical cyclone.
Yeah, it was a fascinating system to watch. Well, we know Brian Peters likes satellite pictures, so that segues into your pick of the week there, Dr. Peters.
Well, my pick is not with satellites this week.
No, I'm bouncing off of Brent's.
Oh,
okay. It's called a segue in the business.
Okay.
Oh, no,
I do like.
Made,
I do like.
You made
the
him
satellite
mad now,
view.
Kevin.
I know.
No,
that's what
I
was saying. You like satellites.
I do like the satellite view. But last night I used a pick from nycaviation.com, which is a fascinating site because I guess there's so many airports up there in New York City that they have this status report, which has information about delays and flight delays and weather, all in one little neat package with each of the airports. But I also discovered that they have a link to a story on the NOAA Orion P3 Hurricane Hunters. Oh. Now, when we think of hurricane hunters, we usually think of the ones I flew with the Air Force, primarily out of Biloxi, Mississippi, and Keesler Air Force Base. But, you know, we also know that NOAA has a couple. I'm not sure how many Hurricane Hunter or research aircraft. And so I found that article very interesting. So it's a long thing with numbers and letters and all that sort of stuff. And
if I'm not mistaken, Brian, I think they have three. There's the Gulf Stream and then there are two Orions.
Two P3s. Yeah, I knew there were two P3s. I just wasn't sure whether the Gulf Stream was still, you know, part of the fleet or not. But anyway, so three. So that's my pick.
Very good. And I see your note in the chat there. Brent, if you can send me the link to your pick, I'll forward that on to Brian so we can put it in the show notes on the website, which is at weatherbrains.com. David, how about a pick?
All right. With all the extreme weather we have going on for the rest of the evening, there's a site that I like to refer to called coolweather.com. It's coolwx.com/extreme. And then you can click on wind. And right now they're reporting all the surface observations with wind gusts in them. And there's one station actually reporting wind gusts of 70 knots or stronger. It looks like it's at Mount Washington, New Hampshire. And then there's seven stations reporting gusts between 60 and 69 knots that range all the way from the Newark Airport all the way to New York Kennedy into, you know, many stations in New Jersey, obviously. And then there's 40 stations that are in the 50 to 59 knot range and 125 stations all the way up into Canada reporting 40 to 49 knots gusts of wind right now. So really some extreme widespread wind conditions, and it's kind of a cool way to keep up on all the extreme weather that's occurring.
Fantastic.
I like that one.
Yeah, I'm glad. I can't believe I had forgotten. I'm glad you reminded me to look at the Mount Washington OBS. I haven't done that all day, but they are currently sustained at 89 and gusting to 123 on Mount Washington, New Hampshire. That's amazing. J.B. Elliott, sir, you have a pick of the week for us.
And by the way, I heard about it.
I'm going to go up there.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead, J.B.
I heard about an hour ago that the National Hurricane Center was going to retire their Sandy name at midnight tonight.
Wow.
That's fast.
That's just a joke, of course. My pick of the week is from David Phillips. He always saves my life. And it's the Guarded Space Center has a full disk image of the Earth showing the massive spread of Sandy. And I sent the link to it earlier.
Very good. Producer JP.
Yes, Kevin. You know, we talked earlier about, you know, how typically every time we have, you know, a major event like this, you got to sort through the fake pictures on Facebook and on Google Plus, and the, you know, and you see a lot of garbage out there. But this was just a really well done article from ABC News, just, you know, talking about that picture in Washington, you know, with the tomb sentinels, you know, guarding the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. It of course explains that the description was not correct, but it just goes on to talk about, you know, with every type of weather event, they're always there. I just thought it was a very touching piece, you know, with a lot of good information as well.
Okay, very good. Nate Johnson, email officer, how about a pick of the week?
Well, I have one thing I want to share for those watching. It's from the Iowa Environmental Mesonet, but this is a map of wind gusts, and this doesn't even include some of the stations that don't have power or comm links, but it shows along Long Island a 190-mile-per-hour wind gust, a bunch in the 60s, 70s. So this is just shows, kind of give you an idea of the expanse of this thing, and I imagine that will get updated from time to time. I have two picks this week. One of them that just came through, but the first one is a YouTube video of a Con Ed installation basically exploding. It was pretty amazing video. It's about 4 minutes worth, and it's like the 4th of July. There's just all sorts of fireworks. Check that out. And then from a media criticism standpoint, this is a blog post from Mr. Media Training, a.k.a. Brad Phillips, and it's asking, are reporters in hurricanes the ones standing out in the middle of the water, are they heroic or stupid?
And we'll leave the judgment up to the individual listener. All right, mine I've actually done before. It was some weeks ago, but I'm going to rehash it. It is a link to the mobile apps from the Red Cross, which will likely be appropriate over the next couple of days for anybody who, especially if you can't get, you don't have any power in your house or anything like that, damage to the power lines going in your house or the communication lines, your mobile device can get the mobile app from the Red Cross, and they've got both iOS and Androids, and so that pick will be there on weatherbrains.com. And against all my training and cajoling and complaining over the last couple of years, not my years, but months, and I'm trying to do this as I'm going to show.
Love
and
it.
For the audio listeners, it's a picture of the Statue of Liberty with a supercell thunderstorm coming in behind it, along with Godzilla, Jaws, the marshmallow guy from Ghostbusters, alien ships shooting lasers, and I don't know what that thing is behind the statue, the blue dragon, Bill. Do you know what that is?
I'm not sure either, but I almost tweeted that out when I saw it, Kim. But
I tried to think of the thing that was the least harmful from my childhood.
Right. And I don't know if anybody's watching Channel 7 in New York City, but I think their Met looks a lot like Conan O'Brien. I don't know if y'all have noticed that.
Oh, wow. There we go. All right. Well, maybe we should start getting some final thoughts on this thing. We'll start with our guests. Brent, what do you think about what we've seen, what we're experiencing now, and what we can expect going forward?
Well, I think, like everybody said, I think it's going to be a long night of wind and rain. I think it is going to pick up and move off pretty quickly off to the northeast. And so, you know, perhaps the worst of it will be in the areas in the mountains with the snow and the rain right along the coast. And maybe it'll move out quickly. But I think we'll be dealing with the impacts here for a while. And certainly lots of good social things to talk about in terms of what is the appropriate strategy for the Weather Service and how they warn people.
And as a modeling guy, are you in line with the latest track from the Hurricane Center? We're going west central New York and then into Canada and then clipping Maine after that. You see any reason to buck that?
No, it's pretty strongly forced. You know, the models have done so well on this, and now it's being picked up by the strong upper level flow. I think that's probably pretty well right on.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us. David, what do you think?
Well, looking at my screen real quick, there's a couple of interesting things that are starting to occur as I've been watching this. We're actually starting to see, for the first time, we've seen very little lightning associated with this storm at all, obviously, because it's so cold. But it looks like there's an area on here that is starting to develop some pretty good convection. We're starting to see some lightning strikes appear in the display, and it's going to enter into that snow area. So we may actually see something that I haven't seen for about about 20 years since I was stationed up in K.I. Sawyer in Upper Michigan, thunder snow.
Thunder snow.
During a tropical storm, which would be, I think, something that you just have to be, you know, to be outstanding in this field, you need to be outstanding in the rain. But could be interesting.
Yeah. You remind me, I was surprised when I went to look at the day two, and again, we're doing this Monday night, but the day two convective outlook from SPC only has thunder in the New England state. And a tiny little bit of the northern part of New York, say across the lake from Burlington, Vermont. But New York and Pennsylvania not included in the thunderstorm outlook for day two, which I thought was kind of interesting. Dr. Peters, what do you think?
I think I'm glad I'm not in the mid-Atlantic states tonight.
Yeah. And really, you know, I mean, wherever we complain or moan about what the job anybody's doing, you really got to give your hats off not only to the Hurricane Center, but to all the National Weather Service folks up and down the East Coast and all the broadcasters, anybody doing forecasting. I mean, this was seen way, way out. And as it got closer, and I think I said on one of the special shows this week, I sure would not want to be in the Mid-Atlantic region or the Northeast having to generate, in addition to everything else you're having to do, generate a 7-day forecast to put on TV, because that was a big, big challenge.
I think as Mike Smith said today, it may turn out to be meteorology's finest hour, despite some shortcomings that we've talked about.
Right, good.
Well, and it's also going to be interesting to see the long-term impacts as to whether Sandy and the power outages have any impact on the voting day a week from Tuesday.
Right, yeah.
So,
JB,
this could have far-reaching implications well beyond the damage, the flooding, and everything else.
Sure. JB, what impressed you today? You look at observations better than any of us, certainly. Any observations outstanding you saw, or any comments on the media coverage?
Eventually, they will be issuing hurricane warnings for 400 miles long with a polygon attached.
Very good.
There was a little dust up today because there's some guy who issued his own tornado watch for parts of New Hampshire and Maine and eastern Massachusetts. And
A broadcaster or who?
No, I think it's just a guy with a website. But he drew a complete polygon the whole nine yards, and it even made the National Weather Service chat. So that was interesting. And it just appears that Baltimore just broke their lowest pressure record to go along with Philadelphia.
Oh, very good.
Theirs was 965.5, and I think they're at 964.9 now.
JP, what do you think? You're the future here. You're going to be doing this podcast when we're all dead and buried. So what do you think of this storm?
Well, you know, my original concern was the whole excessive hyperbole issue, you know, because I've seen many times with events like this where, you know, it seems like you constantly scare people and, you know, it's just a cry wolf syndrome. And I just have this fear that eventually it's going to get somebody killed, you know, not paying attention to something that they should. But I thought in this case, as everyone else has said, it was done very well. And you really can't fault their effort.
Very good. Nate, you pay close attention, as do I, to the social side, the communication side. What do you think there? And also the meteorological side.
Again, this is epic. This is something that we'll be telling our children and our children's children about, that we, you know, those who live through it will be telling them this, and hopefully that everybody, a lot of people will live through this, most will. But I'm looking at I think this is every bit as bad as we thought it was going to be. Arguably, in some places, it may be worse. Books will be written, dissertations will be written, et cetera, et cetera. And the legacy of Sandy will outlast all of us on this podcast, I'm pretty sure. And I want to leave with a thought. Apparently, there are a number of hospitals now in the New York City area without power. Backup generators have failed, and apparently they're doing an evacuation of pediatric NICU patients
from
a hospital without power. And you don't talk about heroes. There you go.
That is a good point and a good way to end. And our thoughts and prayers go to all those people all across the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast, but especially those first responders and those people who take care of the people that are affected by the storm. Well, again, breaking my video rule, I saw James's shadow against the wall in his office. He looked like Alfred Hitchcock there, but apparently he was only just coming in to check on something.
He checked in to see if we were still here, and he's like, I'm leaving him alone.
Yeah. Well, unless anybody's got anything else to say, I'll start to wrap it up. If you do, just jump in. But Otherwise, I'll mention that we usually do this show on Monday nights at 8:30 Central Time, and we stream it live at bigbrainsmedia.com. It's available as a podcast on weatherbrains.com, and there's a WeatherBrains channel on YouTube where you can see the video each week. And all of our contacts, the regulars, are on the website as well, the Facebook pages, the Twitter pages, everything like that. And we certainly want to thank again our guests from WDT, David and Brent, and we hope you guys will come back again sometime in the future under more calm circumstances, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm anxious to know if Donald Trump's hairpiece blew off today.
It's huge.
Perfect way to end, JB. All right. Well, as I usually say, I am not James Spann. Have a great week, and God bless.
You look like him.
Good night.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. Everybody take care.